Welcome to Emotional Sobriety, the next step in recovery with Dr. Alan Berger and Tom Rutledge. This is the return of the storage closet, the closet that she doesn't use much, clearly. And this is my broadcasting space. One of these days, I'll just do like an MTV Cribs of her closet.
Yeah, why don't we really upset Alan and just do a podcast on the things that Sue Ann has?
That'd be a good episode.
And we'll just pause occasionally and say emotional sobriety, and then it'll be okay.
Look
at that. That's an emotionally sober high heel. I love the color yellow. It's not too bright.
It has a spiritual thread. We can't avoid what we're here to talk about today. We have so much stuff, and we need to let go of some of it for our journey.
Oh, I like that. That's threading the needle.
Yeah, it's just we can't escape it today because that's what's happening. That's emotional sobriety.
There's a member of our group, our Facebook group, Sophie J. She writes, hi, I'm new to the group. I started my recovery journey a little over 3 years ago. I had the privilege to do some workshops with Herb K, and it led me to the concept of emotional sobriety. I'm currently struggling emotionally and need to take action. So here I am, uncertain of what this will bring, but willing. I listen religiously to the podcast. It's currently my lifeline. So keep it up because people do listen. Grateful for your presence and service. I'm currently struggling emotionally and need to take action. So here I am, uncertain of what this will bring, but willing. I mean, that could describe me any day of the week.
Well, but I also appreciate her specific reassurance to us, which is when you do something like this, we don't always have information about whether somebody is listening or not, or whatever. You know, we often make the joke of you and Alan and I talk about, you know, referring to our listener. So now we know her name. That's good. It's a very kind thing for her to offer to us as well.
Expecting things to be a certain way to be okay. That's a nugget that I hear Alan return to quite a lot.
That's one of the main tenets of emotional sobriety is this conditional thinking. It's like, you know, I mean, I just that alone, I can spend my, I think I can spend the rest of my career working with people on that and working on that myself. But I was, you know, working with a work woman having problems with her larger family, you know, and, you know, ultimately that's what it comes down to. Everybody has expectations of each other that are not realistic because we don't get to control other people. It's not because people will go like, it's not unrealistic, meaning I believe it's possible for that person to do that. It's like, okay, but do you believe it's up to you that they do it? And it's like, of course, that's where it becomes unrealistic. It's like, it's not up to me to decide what you or Carol are going to say or do today.
Well, right. And not just controlling people, but controlling anything. You know, it's
other than your own perception and interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's such powerful nurture in you, Carol. Like, does anything come up when you read that message to us?
What a lovely, open soul. She's going to hear what she needs along her journey, and she's going to be just fine. And I hope she can know that because, she has all of the ingredients, just being open, humble, willing. I can't think of anything more powerful than what she expressed this morning, really. It was beautiful.
You know what's helping me yesterday? I had so much overwhelm yesterday. So I think, like, do you ever get those hours where you hear from like six people and, you know, like half are work, half are personal. And there's somehow it's almost like they coordinated just to
I have days like that where every client has exactly the same issue.
I'm almost imagining they've got like a table like in Dr. Strangelove and they've all just like, you know, seated around it. And there's like, let's just like wreak havoc on Patrick's emotions right now. Right. But I don't know. I think like whenever I like hit a point of critical mass with stuff like that, I try to disengage is this like need to win the day, quote unquote. Cause I think I do wake up a lot of the times Especially now that I'm feeling so much healthier at this point in my recovery, you know, than I have in years past. I mean, I don't want to oversell it, but like, I feel kind of like a sense of purpose and a sense of drive, you know, just that comes as a consequence of like not living horribly, you know, in enough sequential days that there's kind of like some, I've got some momentum. So anyway, sometimes I'll wake up and I'll just be like, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm just very motivated to get as much done as possible and to quote unquote win the day. But there's just some days I'm just not going to win it. And if I can just like, just calm down from that impulse and just let the fail wash over me, then I'm not as devastated as I would be than if I was just crashing down from that point of high expectation. And, you know, I don't know. Does it sound bad to just say it's, I mean, you've talked about it, Tom, and I think you do it pretty eloquently of like the positive lowering of expectations.
Yeah, but, well, yeah, it's healthy apathy is what I call it. And it's like, it's
so funny.
No, you actually said, you know, I mean, this will sound like it's just a joke, but it's not. It's like when we're so used to keeping our expectations so high without even being aware of it, and we're learning to take them down. You said really just with some humor, but you said you set your goal that is not living horribly. I wrote it down. I thought that's nice. That's a challenge to us. I mean, that's not necessarily how we're going to phrase it as we go along, but it's like, you know, if you're the guru, you know, working with us as the student, you go like, how about we just challenge you with that? Just how about you try not to live horribly today? You know, or in what you were saying, how about you see what happens if you let go of the idea of winning or losing a day? Because that's not how it works, in my opinion, anyway. So it's like, and I think it works that way only when we decide to use that measurement.
I actually heard something when you were talking, and that was instead of winning the day, you had an opportunity to learn the day.
I love it. Yeah, what can I learn? I mean, that's what we talk about a lot. It's like, and I always like to point out, it's not, beware, everybody, of it's not, what am I supposed to learn from this? Because that one drives me nuts, because you go like, okay, so that implies there's one thing, somebody else has decided what that is, and you're supposed to guess it. You know, it's like, and we live our lives that way, and definitely that's more positive than some other ways, but the better way to do it is to change, you know, we change questions. Carol and I, we've talked about that before, you change the question. The question is, What all can I learn today? This shitty situation, what can I learn from it? You know, and then I always think that those are questions, I call them magnet questions. You just let the information keep coming to you and you just work with it. And
I'm hearing another but in there too, but it doesn't mean what does this mean? It means
right.
What have I learned about myself today? What,
yeah, because
you know,
it's,
what
yeah,
am I right. observing?
What does it mean is another thing of like,
yeah.
We ask each other that question. What do you think this means? Which again indicates we don't think about it this way, but we're very programmed that way that somebody else has set our agenda and we're supposed to guess at the answers to these things. It's like kind of an interesting game, maybe, but it's like, I don't think that's the way we want to live our lives.
And it's harsh if something really rough happened today. Oh, great. It happened because there's deep meaning. No, that's not what I mean by that.
Yeah, it's because it's not what does it mean. It's what are you going to do with it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What is my relationship?
That's the emotional sobriety challenge.
Yeah. What's my relationship?
How am I going to respond? Yeah.
You'd mentioned, Carol, you know, a good theme for today might be new possibilities. And that's what Alan always says is, you know, if he could pick one definition for emotional sobriety, it's the uncovering of new possibilities, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. So, you had some life news recently, Carol, or a life incident that you wanted to talk to us about.
Yeah, a couple of podcasts ago, I mentioned the experiment I did at a family gathering where I wanted to join the event, not with trepidation or anticipation or prejudgment, but see if I could actually spend time in the presence of someone I had had difficulty with, in a place of really looking through God's eyes. And I'm not talking about, you know, being religious here. I'm just talking about, can I find a higher view than me judging every single movement, facial expression, word, bringing in the past, all my history, including wanting him to suffer for what he did to me? I don't want any of that anymore. And I, the experience was successful. I was able to spend 2 days with someone and observe him with loving eyes and enjoy the weekend. And it was remarkable. So I've, something new has happened since then that is kind of blowing my mind. It's not about that event, but it's a parallel experience. I've been in two graduate programs. One was a 4-year Gestalt program I just finished. And one is my coaching program I've wrapped up this week. And in it, I was finding that I was having some performance anxiety around doing some of my work in front of my teachers, or in the coaching space, it was to record for the International Coaching Federation to judge and decide, you know, if I'm a certain level to be accredited. And I found myself kind of tripping over my mouth. In the case of the Gestalt one, I didn't tell anybody, but my pulse was suddenly 144 as I started my demonstration client, and I hadn't moved. I was really cranked up and judging myself and focusing on the other people on the camera than my client. So I was really doing a lot of head work. So I wanted to process this with a fellow coach 2 days ago. And we went into a place that was quite remarkable, looking at how I could shift my mindset. And what I learned was so moving. I started talking about life being a dance, coaching being a dance, our interactions with others in a therapeutic space being an intimate dance. And how can you judge art? And then from there, I went on a couple more clicks. And I'll be doggone if I didn't hear myself saying, oh my gosh, if I could do that with an ex-husband, can I step into my own life and see myself through the eyes of my creator? Can I allow myself the same pass I gave someone I had 45 years of resentment toward? And my world opened up, and I hearing myself say, oh my God, what is even to judge about being human? What is there even to worry about in performance? Those words don't even apply to what I was feeling. And if this doesn't open new possibilities, and Tom knows, and Patrick, you and I have known each other 5 years, so you know too, but Tom and I share some committee members.
Yeah, we do.
For me to enter this sacred space of loving myself, all of a sudden, and Tom, you're the poet English major, so you'll get a chuckle. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I felt like Walt Whitman writing a song of myself.
Beautiful.
I have been celebrating being me for 2 days.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom those words coming out of my mouth. But so whether it's differentiation, individuation, living emotional sobriety, or I stopped my suffering with non-judgment and detachment, it doesn't matter what approach you take. I have stepped into a new world, and I am so grateful.
Well, absolutely. It's a moment of enlightenment. It's like, Yeah, when you say that, because I loved it when you told me about your the outcome of the experiment before is the idea, and I think you mentioned, you know, it was interesting to wonder what it was like for him to,
yes,
you know, to experience kindness and love, you know, or how he ever perceived that. But you know, and I that's one of the things that, now I will add this, that I always say to people, it's like one of the advantages of getting better and changing how we treat people is that the people we have been previously mistreated, it's kind of fun to fuck with their minds because they get confused. It's like it doesn't last long, but just it's kind of interesting and entertaining to watch them go like, what the hell is going on here? It's like, because and of course we're more surprised than they are, but I love that fact that you said that about dealing with him. And just, I mean, and that's our humanness too, Carol. The idea is, it's not hard at all to imagine that I could be in a similar situation, and it would not occur to me to apply that to myself. You know, yes. it's like that's why we need each other. That's why you have another conversation. You have conversations with this, your fellow coach. It's like, and all of a sudden, you know, you're just looking at, we're all each other's mirrors. And all of a sudden you're going, you have that awareness that just now that you say it, it's like, find the hidden picture. It's like, well, of course.
It's been there all along.
Yeah.
And I never would have heard it. I believe I never would have heard it on my own.
Yeah,
it took,
and that's not a bad thing. See, that's not a, and see, I know you to know to listen to you. That you're not. I also want to say that to the listeners. That's not a judgment of yourself. That's just an observation of yourself. It's like no, we don't. It's not our job to figure this stuff out all on our own. There's a reason we have each other.
Yes, there is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I couldn't go through that and not share it as a possibility for others, especially others who just beat the living shit out of themselves every single day and couldn't do something right if they tried in their mind.
Right.
And now I'm seeing us as such beautiful beings, unworthy of any kind of judgment. It's just a special place.
Right. And you don't have to start. You're talking about listeners who you know, that, I mean, I know this about all three of us who have a history of beating the holy crap out of ourselves.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I've always objected when somebody wants to begin working with me in that state or somebody else with, you must love yourself. It's I'm sorry. I can't connect at that point.
For the three of us to be sitting here, you know, and marshaling what we can to deliver this to you. That is a hard fought.
A hard fought battle.
Yeah.
Well, in the people who, and I think this is me. I mean, this is a judgment. This is me taking inventory. But it's like when people lead with love yourself, love your, do this stuff. It's like I appreciate that what's behind that, and I love that kind of stuff. What I just have said for a long time, and you guys can correct me if you think I may be off here. It's like the person who's doing that with folks who are new at this. That person hasn't ever hated themselves, or not for long. It's like, don't, you know, try to live life not horribly. It's like, that's where we start. It's
you know,
like
exactly what I mean, by the way, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It is exactly what you're saying. Lower the bar to something that's realistic. I'm going to have a great day today. Can I do that? I have no idea. Can I not have a shit day? I think I can pull that off. You know, and it's like, it doesn't mean you can't change your it'll grow. Your expectations will naturally begin to match what you're doing. You see, instead of us trying to reach something that we, again, somebody else has set for us, some cultural thing says, this is how we should be functioning. It's like, says who? You know, and by the way, I always want people to know, if you're working on self condemnation, and turn you down. One of the things you can absolutely do, just something that I have to teach people all the time, is stop measuring. Just go back to what you said, Patrick, and winning the day. Stop measuring things according to the day. It's like in the course of a day, how many different feelings, how many different moods do we actually go through? Well, we don't know that unless we stop and observe them, you know. And it's like one of the things I learned was, because I was just I was the absolute worst at basically labeling a day some point early in the day, saying this is a bad day or this I'm depressed today. It's like when I stop doing that, when I stop paying attention to how I feel from moment to moment, it's like, I may well be depressed right now. It's like, that doesn't mean a thing about how I'm going to feel in a few minutes. I mean, something like coming into this conversation. We all have that experience. But the idea is, how often do we come into a conversation feeling one way and leave feeling in an entirely different way? You know, just because, and why it's for some, can be the content, but I think it's mainly because of the connection.
Is it safe to say that was a spiritual experience, Carol, that you went through?
I would say the reason I mentioned individuation, differentiation, emotional sobriety, and a spiritual experience is because I think it's all four. And individuation and differentiation to me are the same thing, depending on your school of thought and psychology. But I think you can approach it. All roads lead to Mecca. So it doesn't matter how I got here. I have found an opening in my understanding that is profound, no matter how you define it. For me, yes, it felt like a huge spiritual awakening. Yes. It also felt like the culmination of hard work, one foot in front of the other, in years of trying to understand myself psychologically and growing up. I think it also is one of the gifts of choosing emotional sobriety in your life.
You're going to take it out for a spin, I'm guessing. Where are you going to take it? What are you going to do?
My next coaching session, without a doubt. And I don't have the recording I need to submit yet, but I know in my soul it's happening in the next few days. I'm not worried about it.
All right.
If I get out of my way, and okay, I will say this, charged with a spiritual thing, if I can have two more minutes on this. I spent years wondering, you know, what my grandiose purpose in the world was. What am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to, you know, become? What is, you know, oh my God, ad infinitum. Anything to keep from looking at today. I projected to who I was supposed to really be. What I got back from that was from creation. I created you with the information and energy in your cells to be exactly who I had in mind when you were created. Mm-hmm. Your only job is to get obstacles out of the way. I would say that this was one of my graduation points in removing obstacles from my life. I am going to get self-hatred and self-judgment out of my way to just be Carol. Whatever that is, my creator said, that's enough. I don't have to be or do or anything, but just be. And so I hope that helps answer it. I can't really stick a pin on this. It was so deep, so broad. It has blown what is left of this old mind and heart. So spiritual, analytical, psychological, it doesn't really matter. I graduated into some new state of being that I am grateful for. And will I mess it up some? Of course I will. I'm human. I will go two steps back, forward, and three steps back. But that's the journey, and it's okay. But anyway, that is a little more of what's happening in my head.
The idea, even the distinction between, was that a psychological insight or was that a spiritual insight? The answer to that question is for me, I think for you too, Carol, is yeah, it certainly was. It's like because what was it? It was an insight. It was a moment of enlightenment, literally enlightenment. I mean, somebody shone a light. I shone a light. Somebody shone a light over there, and we found something that, as you said, has always been sitting there. And it's like we no longer beat ourselves up for finding things well into, you know, our later part of our life. We go like, wow, it's amazing how much stuff we still have to find at this age. And by the way, congratulations on graduating from both of your programs.
Thank you very much.
I know you worked hard for both of those. Yeah, I know the whole time you were going through the Gestalt thing with Roger and Alan, I just continually let you know. It's like, it doesn't matter what they think. Forget about what Roger, who cares what Alan and Roger think? It's like you know, it's like easy for me to say from outside. Yeah.
And you know what's fun about that? It was an Gestalt experimental therapy. And I talk now in terms of experiments, and it helps take some of the sting out of mucking through life. It gives permission for everything to just be an experiment.
Everything is an experiment. Everything. Yeah. It's like you know, do it responsibly. I mean, don't be reckless, but it's like, no. I say that to a client all the time. It's like when I suggest something, all I'm suggesting is let's find out what happens when we do it this way.
Try it on. It can't be worse than stewing in your own juices alone. Yeah.
I often have a bit of a hypothesis that if we can do it this way, I think it's going to turn out in a different way, or I think it's going to do this. But I'm also I've learned through the years to not be married to the hypotheses that I have, and say like again, because everything's learning. So if I think, you know, if Patrick, if you do this and this and this, I think you're going to have this kind of result. You go through it and you go like, well, I actually had nothing like that. Great information. It's like back to the drawing board.
I had a therapy session with my dad and with Alan a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting because there was a time 7 years ago where the shoe was on the other foot, and that my dad joined me for a session with Alan. Mm-hmm. And they were like, hey, you should stop using drugs and drinking. And
we suggest you try not to live your life horribly.
Yes, exactly. Just
a thought.
Yeah, just a gentle nudge in that direction. But it was really nice, you know, like, I mean, I was... The way we kind of like lowered the spacecraft at the end of the session was I got to ask my dad, well, you know what? That wasn't so terrible, was it? You know, and he said, no, it wasn't. And because he doesn't really do therapy. Like, I think he went to a guy for like some anger issues he was having, like at the tail end of his career and, you know, in his marriage and stuff. This was like 20 years ago, maybe. And he saw a guy for a few sessions, and I think at one point he told me the reason he stopped seeing that therapist was that it was like a much younger guy, and who I think if he was married, he was newly married. And I think that like my dad just really needed somebody that reflected his own experiences more. My dad's got very powerful ego. So it's like, you know, he will jump at the first opportunity to say that, oh, this guy doesn't know shit. And but anyway, it was... It was just nice to sit with him. And, you know, my parents have been going through some stuff and health stuff and relationship stuff. And I was just kind of asked, like, it was kind of like a spontaneous thing that we were going to be like, you know, just doing like a three-way conversation. And it was much more a conversation between me and my dad than between either of us and Alan. And Alan was just kind of like the smart moderator who would just, you know, I was grateful I got to do it. And if there's a moral to the story, I don't know if there is, it's that I would not have been capable of that years ago, or like, you know, that this, I would not be in any capacity to be supportive or encouraging of somebody else going through something, turmoil, without going through a long period of getting my shit together, and which is ongoing. So that's kind of where I'm at. Right. Yeah.
Well, and the thing you're saying, where it was a conversation between you and your dad, it's like, and I don't know if this is your experience, but sometimes, you know, when I tell couples that I work with this, or any relationship I'm talking to, it's like, one of the things that happens when you just bring a third person in there, you tend to your best self tends to show up. I mean, as long as you're being honest, and you know, I actually had one couple one time that just asked me. They said they'd been working with me for a while, and now we say, I know I'm doing a good job as a couples therapist if I have less and less to do, and if ultimately I feel like I'm listening in on a conversation that's none of my business, and it's like, but this couple just said, how much for the room? I said, what do you mean? She said, we talk better in this room. How about if we just rent that? We don't need you. And it's like, and I thought, man, there's a whole nother line of income I can think about just renting, right, renting a room space. Because it's a great place to have a conversation. It's like, so I'm working on that.
I want to cop to something too, in case that session sounded too easy for me to get to that place of enlightenment, because I have to own the control freak heifer that I can be. And I was in that session. She needed some coaching hours. I said, great, I've got a light topic. Let's look at this. Well, nothing with me is ever light. Of course, we went deep inside. But in it, I started coaching her about coaching me. I did. I'm owning this. I said, ask me about this. I did literally with that fake. And she looked at me and said, no. And she asked me another question that took me deeper. Here's the thing. I don't have perspective. I was going to keep using, you know, the thing of if we keep doing what we've always done, we'll always get what we've always gotten. I was about to, just in front of someone, keep spinning in my head. She was not having it, thank God, and took me another direction. And in one sentence, I looked at her and said, got it, thank you, because I could see where she was. I love how you
had the backstage conversation like that.
Oh, I know, it's hilarious. Well, some of my friends will say, yeah, can I stop coaching? Some friends will say, can I stop coaching for a minute? Sure, what? Well, I'm not sure what to do with it. So we were doing, you know, it was hysterical. I was about to stand in my own way. But I needed a thought partner, which is what coaching is. I needed a thought partner to hold me in a safe space, essentially say, time out on you just a minute. I have a question. Ask it and let me go deep instead of go where I've always gone before. Right. So it was not smooth sailing. I had to surrender control and she had to make me behave. And, you know, it was. But then we got there.
In order to teach this stuff, in order to share this stuff, in order to write this stuff, what I've learned is that there's some amount of generalization you have to make, and there's a tremendous amount of simplification. Because, you know, but people would look at, I remember when Jenny wrote her book and we were doing presentations on it, people would go, like, when we were out there talking with people about it, people would go, you know, like, well, you seem to understand this insight quite easily. And either Jenny or I would say, no, she didn't. You know, we didn't say that took months of therapy to go back through that. But it's like, and she would own that and say, like, no, this was, you know, I don't need to write about that in the book. What I need to tell you is this is what we did, and this is where it took me. So that's part of what we do when we tell a story, and it by definition will seem simpler.
Yes.
Yeah.
One thing you mentioned about just saying, love yourself, be kind to yourself. There's not enough feedback data in that. What the hell does that even mean? Right. Because if you haven't lived that, that's not a roadmap to anything.
I found something better than happy. And I'm a fan of happy. I like happy. But what's better than happy is self-respect. And part of what's better about it is that we can do it. We can measure it. I can know at the end of the day that I have been congruent with my value system, you know, and then I may be happy about that or something else, or I may feel miserable about something. But that to me, if there's such a thing as a definition of winning the day, Patrick, that would be my definition. Is I lined up pretty decently with my value system, and I have my self-respect and integrity is intact.
And that's what I did with my experiment with my ex-husband. But yeah. I had not realized love your neighbor as yourself. That's a pretty bad trip to your neighbors if you haven't.
Oh, yeah, yeah. People say that and I go like, you don't want that.
So I can say I am one click further now for loving myself in the journey of being in alignment with my values.
No, and we're talking about when I was off on call, the reverse golden rule, treat yourself as you treat others, you know, because we are so much kinder to others in who are meeting the line at the grocery store, you know, by nature. And we're not, and now we're doing better. That's not necessarily true now for me, because I also tend to be kind to myself. I just finished doing another inner child work job, mm-hmm. and we did a thing about belief systems. We did a deal with about protection from the should monster, and we talked about belief systems, and everybody came up with a belief that they had that they possibly didn't believe, but definitely didn't want to have anymore. And wow. It's one of, you know, I still get surprised, Carol and Patrick too, but because Carol's been in the retreats with me and stuff. And when you go into that level of experiential challenging of people, it's like, first of all, it's amazingly wonderful how honest people will be with each other. It's just gut level honest. And it's also like, why? It's just the idea that, we've all witnessed it. You go like, you can't see that in other people, but when they tell you what their belief is that they want to get rid of, it's like, it's horrible. Well, you know, everybody else in the room goes like, I know that's bullshit, you know, but it's the one person who's saying it is, of course, we're the one who's not sure.
You know, I've been in a workshop for a few weeks with a friend of mine who's a fellow coach, and she invited me to just join in and observe and see what she was doing. Mm-hmm. She was in a workshop. She was a really high level executive in a large, well-known company. Mm-hmm. And she left that to become a coach. Mm-hmm. And she said she was in a workshop one time with senior leaders, like 250 senior leaders. And they did a survey on what's your one biggest doubt. And over 75% of them said, I'm not good enough.
Absolutely. Or some version of it. Yeah, man, it's, some that's version the truth. Of,
I'm yep. a piece of shit. I'm an imposter. So this is such a universal human condition that we can link arms on and bring ourselves forward together on.
And I appreciate you saying that, because a small group of people, we did that workshop last Saturday. It's like, even though everybody had different words for it, that's exactly the theme of everybody's belief that they needed and they want to get rid of it. They want to change is not enough. I'm a disappointment. Somehow I'm letting the world down. It's like it is. It's universal.
Yes. Yes.
And I think it's healing just when you sit in a room full of people who are willing to be that honest, to realize you're not, you know, when you look around all these other people that we see or have it, you know, as we look at them, we go, you guys have it together. It's like, and you realize, oh shit, they have the same thought I have. Yeah. That's to me all by itself, that's healing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I love the part in your workshop I attended last week.
And, oh, yeah, you were there, yeah.
About meditation, which I never heard before, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. like, well, I, because you used to talk yourself out of meditating by saying that you just don't have time for that. Mm-hmm. But then you're mm-hmm. like, well, do I have time to breathe?
one breath, yeah.
One breath. I absolutely love that. It's such a like pierces right through the firewall of bullshit, mm-hmm. you know, that like prevents us from just taking that little bit of extra time. Yeah, well, of course,
and you remember the punchline of that thing is actually, the truth is, and when I really tell the whole story there, I really do, and I describe in a couple of places where in books and stuff, and the one breath meditation, how you actually do that one deep breath, and just takes takes a minute or so, and it's like, then you're completely, it really transforms me every time I do it. But yes. I remember the day when I was needing to get to work, and I'd been doing that every day. And I remember the day that I ran out the door and got in the car because I didn't have time. one breath. It's like that's the human mind. That's why we're trying not to live horribly.
I took a long breath yesterday. I mean, I haven't had a history of panic attacks or anything, but I just felt such anxiety before I had to share at a Zoom meeting. And anyway, I just closed my eyes and kind of just did some breathing and was able to kind of
course correct. Yeah.
You brought yourself into the moment. And when we're in the moment, nothing's really wrong. If we're present right this minute, unless, of course, we're on fire or something, which also brings you into the moment. But it's a
the point stands.
Yeah, it's no, but I can tell you this. If I'm teaching people that, and it seems weird to say you have to teach people this, but if I'm going to teach somebody, I'm sitting in my office, I'm going to teach somebody this one breath meditation. I can feel it right now. I can demonstrate it, and I can have them share with me. But as I do that process, there is a voice in my head that says, "Hurry up."
Yes.
Because I mean, we're taking probably no more than 90 seconds to complete this entire exercise. I'm teaching somebody at a 90-minute session, you know, 90 seconds at this. And there's my voice always says, "Hurry up. You know, we're wasting time." It's like, and I'm waiting for that to fade away, but it's like I've learned not to, I'm not going to force it out. It's just like it just is there, you know. But every time I do it, and it used to be I would be more impatient with myself, but now when I do it, I don't want to come out of it. You know, I drop my shoulders. I feel the release. I have the breath, and then I'm sitting there, and it's like you in the moment. You go like, it doesn't have to be complicated. You know, as a matter of fact, the book I'm working on finishing right now is called Sit Down and Shut Up. And it's a guide to simple meditation and practical wisdom. And but it's to say there are lots of ways of meditating and there are lots of methods of meditation and people will teach you. I'm not saying anything about those things. What I'm saying is that ain't me. It's like, but I let that kind of stuff keep me away from meditation for a long time because I couldn't do it. I knew people who just wonderfully loved doing their TM every day, you know, 20 minutes, twice a day, stuff like that. It's like, you know, could I have done that? I suppose. But it's like, this is, you know, that's my meditation. Sit down and shut up.
We own our breath. That's all it takes. We don't have to pay a guru.
That's right.
I went to a free workshop a few weeks ago about using intuition and coaching. Well, I'm highly intuitive. Mm-hmm. And she went through several woo-woo steps to get there. And I realized that was lovely, but I already used my intuition. It's already mine. I don't need to join a program to learn how to use my intuition.
Right.
It's already mine, just like my breath is. And Patrick, I'm so excited to hear you using that technique because one of the things that I think about with some of our get-togethers is so many of us are in our 70s. You can be a young person and get this stuff and get the mileage out of it like you're doing. And it just makes my heart so happy. I'll be 75 in 2 months. You don't have to be 75 in 2 months to suddenly start loving yourself. No. You can be 20. You can be 18. You can be 30. So it's a possibility for everybody. You don't have to drag it on over a lifetime.
No, and so we're bouncing off each other here, Carol. I'm going like, so what occurs to me is I'm making up a story about Patrick now. And it's like, and it's, you know, who knows? But it's like,
I think the deductible is going up on using our own breath. So be mindful of that.
Probably is. But it's like, so when Patrick's 75, it's like I'm pretty sure he'll still be discovering brand new things and be amazed at what he's doing. It's like, what will it be? Because we relearn things, but it's like there'll be even more to learn.
I hope I'm lucky enough to getting rattled in different ways at age 75.
You're curious. How can you not?
you're just nope. easily rattled. How could you not? I mean,
yeah. No more rock climbing though.
Oh my God.
I think I'm done with that. That could put the kibosh on quite a bit. Well, hey, you know, great show today, guys. I love you both. And Bill Cleveland, do you know Bill, Tom? Or he was at our, we had our workshop with Joe last Friday. And I know, he spoke briefly.
I've heard you talk about him. I don't think I've met him. I don't think I know him. No.
He's just a great guy. And he's like, you know, he sponsors a lot of guys at my home group, HBMS, in Hermosa Beach. And anyway, I'm just looking forward. We're going to have him on next week. And possibly in the week after, Jamie Merrick, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, who had a lot of like powerful things to say about trauma and EMDR in Dublin, might be joining us. So
cool.
So we got to keep getting together with the super friends.
Absolutely. Bring people on. Less work for me to do.
But Carol's my favorite. So.